Welcome to Your New Mexico Government. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. Today we are asking, what's new? Now that we're at the beginning of a teeny tiny reopening, some people are taking it into their own hands to provide a little something special to their communities. We learn about a new radio station designed to give live performers a platform to connect to their audience in a fresh way. I get hip on what it's like to cruise Route 66. We discover the motivations behind a man who created a mobile drive-in movie theater, and we search to understand the symbolism of the moths. Yes, the moths. They're also emerging, right? I do know that they're just about everywhere. All that coming up, but first, executive producer Marisa DeMarco has a news rundown of what we know today, May 20th, as of 5 p.m.
Brazil and Peru are struggling with high numbers of coronavirus cases, and around the globe, there were 160,000 new cases, according to the World Health Organization. That's the biggest number in a single day. The WHO is especially concerned about countries with less wealth. The United Nations is saying that the low number of coronavirus cases in African countries might mean that the continent has been spared the worst of the pandemic because of swift responses there, Al Jazeera reports. All 50 states in the U.S. are on the path to reopening, according to the Washington Post, but many states do not meet federal benchmarks created by the CDC, and public health experts warn a second wave of infections could be coming. Drug companies have started early experimental vaccine tests, and volunteers everywhere are part of the experiment, the New York Times reports. And there is cautious optimism that at least one vaccine will be ready sometime next year. Normally, vaccine development takes many years or even decades, according to a virologist in the story. In New Mexico, the coronavirus transmission rate overall is down to 1.12, which means each person that has the virus spreads it to 1.12 other people on average. That number is better than the target set by the state for this time, according to the Albuquerque Journal. The governor said in a news conference that's ongoing as I write this, "We haven't seen a decline in cases yet, but that transmission rate appears to be stable." If things keep going well, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham said, there may be a partial reopening of dine-in restaurants, salons, and gyms on June 1st. But to do that, people have to stay home now and be serious about wearing masks in public. There is a jump in the transmission rate in the southern part of the state, according to Human Services Secretary David Scrace. And it might be because of people traveling to and from Texas. State officials reported 134 more confirmed cases in New Mexico, making the total 6,317, and seven more people died, bringing the death toll to 283. Half of those deaths happened in McKinley and San Juan counties in the northwestern corner of the state, the journal reports. The state government is also now releasing the numbers of confirmed infections at prisons and ICE detention centers. The worst is at the Otero County Processing Center, which detains migrants in Chaparral, New Mexico. The number there is up to 62. We'll post the full list of facilities and their cases on this post online at KUNM.org. And just a reminder, there are no longer any state restrictions on who can get tested now for free through the Department of Health. And the hotline you need is 1-855-600-3453. For Your New Mexico Government, I'm Marisa DeMarco.
Continuing our conversation on what's new in Albuquerque, there's something that's new but has been around for a long time. I'm on the line with Mr. John Romero of the Drifters Car Club here in town. How's it going, John?
Really good. Really good.
So tell me about the Drifters Car Club.
Well, we are a community-based car club. We were founded about 5 years ago. We have about 22 members in our car club, and we build our cars just to drive. They're not show cars, so we do a lot of cruising. We show them for senior citizens, anything done with the community.
Nice. I like that. Now, I lived in Los Angeles for some time in my young adult life, and I lived off of Crenshaw Boulevard, where, you know, you've seen in Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube videos, where everybody's cruising. And it was the first time, being from the East Coast, it was the first time I got to see that. I'm like, it looks just like the music videos. And it seemed like a wonderful celebration, a way to see people. Talk to me about what it feels like to cruise and what it does for the people who take part in it.
Cruising is a unique thing. Some people don't understand it, but we get to cruise on our mother road. that most people don't even get to drive on. So it's just like another feeling to be able to express the pride in the vehicle you're driving, because a lot of the vehicles that we drive, we built ourselves.
Mm.
And we're just kind of trying to restore history and keep history alive with these vehicles.
Yeah. I used to work at a bar downtown, and on Sundays, that was my shift. And I would see the cruise and start, and it seemed like a lot of families. It's not just one particular group. What does that mean for the community when people get involved in things like that?
Well, you know, most of the guys out here that drive, and women that, that cruise these cars, they're very family orientated. From car club to car club, you know, we share problems with the cars that we're having, or resources to find parts for these cars, because some of these cars, they no longer make manufacture. So it is a big family that we are together, sharing the problems with cars, getting them repaired, locating parts. Also, you know, just showing the cars themselves, the pride of the cars.
I've heard that you all are organizing car parades to recognize recent graduates and essential workers. Tell me about that experience.
Well, that is an awesome feeling to be able to support the young people that are graduating from college or high school, to acknowledge their achievements. Also, the essential workers, you know, the medical field, we also do praise for them, to acknowledge and tell them that, you know, we do appreciate all they're doing for everybody. And so we all stay in our vehicles, so we do not get on our vehicles. We drive by, we have our sirens in our cars, and we stop and let people look at them, or we just drive by and make a roundabout just to say, hey, we do appreciate you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, what are some of the soundtracks and the music that's normally played when people cruise?
For us personally, the Drift Car Clubs, we like to listen to the oldies of the 50s. Or even, because we're in New Mexico, we listen to New Mexico music, which is, you know, the 89.1 radio station.
How can people become a part? Say they want to go out and just watch or experience cruising for themselves. Where can they go?
Well, you know what? We normally would like to invite people out to Central and between 2nd and 7th Street. But for right now, we would like people just to see us driving down the roads. So that way they're not gathering together for right now.
I hear that. Okay. And before I let you go, what kind of car are you cruising in?
I drive a 1947 Chevrolet Fleetline. It is a two-tone green.
That sounds real nice. Yeah. I once cruised in a pair of Nikes. It's not quite the same.
Yes, indeed.
I want to thank you so much for being on the show. He is John Romero with the Drifters Car Club. Thanks again.
Thank you. Have a great day.
My next guest wanted to bring smiles to people's faces, so he started his own mobile drive-in movie theater service. It's called Real Big Flicks. I'd like to welcome Alec Cameron to the show. Alec, thanks for being with me. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Khalil. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Now, you were just awarded from the mayor of Albuquerque Volunteer of the Month. Tell us about
that. Yes, sir. A big thank you to Mayor Tim Keller. He reached out to me for my efforts with the playground project that I was working on a few months back. There's a school called Kingdom Builders. It's part of Mission ABQ. A good friend of mine, James Landry, leads that program. I stopped by to see what I can do to help. They have a thrift store. And part of my other business, Last Ditch Effort, we do a lot of property clearings, estate clearings, and I accumulate a surplus of stuff. And so I figured, you know, why not give everything I have to them? That's how they fund their program. And as he was giving me a tour around the property, I noticed their playground was just depleted. People in the area, unfortunately, throw their used sharps over the fence. And so the teachers have to walk the playground and pick up the sharps before the kids can get out.
Hmm.
There was no playground equipment. It just looked awful. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to change this. Took my money, my time, just started looking up plans and repurposing materials that I gathered from my other job sites, and started building playground equipment and made it happen. The playground came out beautiful. Kids are happy. The garden that we planted is producing. So it's been a beautiful thing.
Now, in terms of ideas, someone who could be sitting at home, like, I want to be creative. I want to help out the community. I would say thank you very much. But,
yes,
you know, as far as someone sitting at home and they're asking themselves that, how can I, in a creative way, help out the community? What are some tips of inspiration you have to offer?
I just find just be kind. This is the time to be bigger than yourself. You know, I funded this whole thing out of my pocket. You know, I didn't go into this thinking that it's going to be the next great thing or a big business plan or, you know, or anything like that. It's just something that I felt needed to be done. And if I hadn't the ability to do it, then I was going to do it. You know, at our last event, we were able to raise almost 400 pounds of food for the local Roadrunner Food Bank. Those donations go a long way.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of families now, you know, people that have lost their jobs, they've lost their business, they're losing their homes, they don't have food to eat. And I want to be that beacon of light for this community to help out.
I absolutely love that. Have you had people who showed up at your events who've participated? Have you had them come to you and ask, hey, how can I get involved?
It almost gives me chills just saying that. I mean, I've had corporations that I never thought I would ever be in touch with reach out, local and, you know, international, you know, as well as just the people. You know, people have stepped up in a big way, you know, and from a non-greedy standpoint as well. You know, nobody's looking to capitalize. They're all just wanting to help.
You mentioned how people are doing it through a sense of altruism. They're doing it because they want to, and there's no greed involved. Also, in times like this, there are a lot of opportunists who will get out and try to take advantage. Have you run into any folks who are of that type of philosophy?
This is something for the people rather than that of from a capitalistic standpoint. Yeah. You know, a lot of the people that are wanting to do something similar are trying to be the next AMC, the next Cinemark,
yeah,
and charge people and take advantage of these times. You know, this is not the time to do that. You know, lots of people are hurting. You know, I'm not trying to take money from people. I'm not trying to fatten my pockets or, you know, move up to that the apartment on the east side. You know, it's something that I feel like it makes people smile. And that right there is payment in itself.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being on the show. He's Alec Cameron, Volunteer of the Month for the City of Albuquerque and owner-operator of Real Big Flicks. Thank you so much for being with me, my man.
Thanks for having me, Khalil.
This is Your NM Government. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. We're covering the way the virus and health measures are impacting people differently around the state. Along with the slow reopening of the state, we've shifted our broadcast to 3 days a week. Tune in Wednesday through Friday at 7:30 p.m. here on KUNM or find every episode anywhere you get your podcasts. And I do mean anywhere. Are you bored? Do you need motivation to get going? Are you asking yourself, how can I help? Always check our hub for resources and volunteer opportunities over at KUNM.org. And we want to hear about your experiences. Call up our hotline and leave a message and we'll interview you. 505-218-7084 or email yournmgov@gmail.com. With all the live music venues shut down, performers are left creating other means of getting their music out to fans. The curator of a local performance venue decided to take it old school with a new endeavor. KUNM's Ty Bannerman has that story.
I am speaking with Maria Erin Jones, co-founder and director of the Albuquerque DIY Performance Space, Zine Library, and Clubhouse, the Tanix. Hi, Maria. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Ty.
So first of all, how are you doing with the stay-at-home order and global pandemic?
I'm faring pretty well, you know, as things go. I'm able to work from home, and that's fine. I have an immune-compromised parent and an autistic brother, and I am helping, you know, caretake as much as I can, keeping them both inside and healthy as much as possible. So that's a challenge. All in all, doing pretty well.
You describe the Tanix as a safer space and DIY venue. How do those two concepts figure into the kind of events that you showcase?
I feel that the Tanix is open to all people. I feel that when people come to shows at the Tanix, they're not looking over their shoulder at who's staring at them for being who they are, for being what is perceived as different, any of those things. And another thing that I've implemented years ago that really was kind of imperceptible, I don't think anybody noticed it, but I basically require people of color and women to be on each bill as much as possible. And I think that creates a more diverse audience. And then it makes the events that you're watching diverse too. So you're challenged in a couple of different directions, which I think is great.
Now, what about the DIY aspect?
Well, the DIY aspect is that if the door is locked, I gotta unlock it. So I'm the one who does just about everything that has to do with an event. So I'm booking the show, I'm talking with artists, I'm making the invites, I am running the show, I am trying to balance the sound, all of that. And I'm sweeping the floor and taking out the trash at the end of the night. I should say that too. It's not just me. It's people who jump in and help out where they can.
How is that important to your mission?
I think until someone has actually run an event or run a show, they don't know how it happens. So I think it's really useful that if anybody's interested in running a show, even if a house show, I think it's a useful experience to care for community in a situation, even for a couple of hours like that.
You're someone who believes it's important to provide a space for performers, especially women and people of color. Obviously, the physical space is shut down. Other than some great shows, what do you think Albuquerque audiences are missing by not having access to the kind of space that you run?
I think by nature, sometimes we as humans live in homogenous environments. We don't push ourselves necessarily. It's just more comfortable to not do that. So I feel like spaces like the Tanix, you know, and other DIY venues that have existed or do exist in Albuquerque, I think are really important in terms of just getting outside of a comfort zone. It's critical, I think, as a human being to be curious. It's helpful to be a curious human being. I think spaces like the Tanix help foster that curiosity.
Do you think there's a danger during a time when everybody's staying in their own homes of losing sight of that diversity of what makes up Albuquerque?
I do. I think we can become insular and self-focused and siloed in situations like this and combative. I think our tolerance level for each other goes down when we're not in community in a physical way. So I feel like it is a loss.
A few weeks ago, you started a podcast that features a lot of the musicians who played at the Tanix. It's called Tanix Radio. How does this podcast continue your space's mission to fostering that kind of curiosity?
In a way, it's deepened to me. It's deepened the connection to the music that you listen to and the artist who's making it. And that, it seems like a really important thing right now to remember that there are people on the other side of these little glowing screens that we are engaging with. And Tanix Radio is an opportunity to listen to them.
Has this podcast changed how you think of your community?
Again, I just feel like Tanix Radio is allowing me to deepen friendships, to find out more about the people who are around us every day and what their struggles are. You know, can you be a working musician in this economy, in this climate, in the days of the Rona? I'm imagining that some of this information, some of the interviews are also offering people information of how they can do things in their lives too.
And where can folks find the show?
Right now it's on SoundCloud. So it's SoundCloud The Tanix.
Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much, Ty.
Many thanks to Ty Bannerman for that piece. You may have seen them in the daytime. You've definitely seen them at night. The Moths have arrived. They have arrived. Here with me now, KUNM's own. We've got Nash Jones, who's a host and reporter, who's done a special story on the Moths. Nash, how's it going?
Going pretty well, Khalil. How are you?
I'm doing well. So the Moths are about. A lot of people are frustrated. I am not one of them.
How are you feeling about the Moths?
You know, I love the Moths.
Really?
Yes. My personal philosophy in life, something I've always done, is whenever there's what people call an infestation, I wouldn't necessarily use that word, but whenever there is a sudden occurrence of many animals showing up, whenever I have an encounter with an animal, be it a roadrunner, a skunk, a raccoon, a coyote, I always look up the symbolism. And it helps me make decisions on the things that I'm pondering and going through in life. I look up the symbolism. I apply it to what's happening to me in my life, and then I make that decision to move forward.
Yeah, you know, I was interested in the symbolism of moths as well. And as you're about to hear, I was able to speak with a folklorist in the UK about some of the symbolism attached to moths and how we can read into their sudden influx during the pandemic here in New Mexico. And interesting that you mentioned the term infestation, because people have been throwing that term around quite a bit. And as you'll hear, that might not be exactly what's going on.
Okay, well, we're about to find out what is happening. We will all fly toward the light.
That's right, towards the lamp, as you'll hear.
There are all sorts of new human ingenuity and activities coming out of the pandemic in New Mexico, but there's also a non-human event that's been hard to miss.
It seemed incremental at first, But then all of a sudden, they were everywhere.
It's like a couple of moths, and the next day a few more moths, and you start to think, I feel like there's more moths, and I feel like there's more every day.
Moths. Miller moths. Droves of the dusty creatures are clinging to windowsills and pinging porch lights all over the state.
It looks like something out of an old Hitchcock movie or something.
You know the movie The Birds?
The moths have joined us, making the daily pressures of the pandemic even more surreal.
My house has a sliding door and I have a curtain, so I didn't see that there were moths out there. And I opened the door and they just rushed me, and it was, you know, like a swarm. It was like a wave of moths. There were so many of them, and it just scared the bejesus out of me. It was like a moth attack.
I went out one night and I opened the door, and I don't even know if the moths were in or outside the screen, but like immediately it was like, and I just slammed the door closed.
I was taking out my recycling the other day, and I got the sense that the ristra hanging on my front door needed my attention. I don't know if it was like a little bit of sound or a little bit of movement, but in my peripherals, it was almost like someone raising their hand or something. And I whipped around and looked at it just in time to see 50 moths erupting from the red chilies, and the only place to go was straight into my face.
You don't want to be the only person in your neighborhood that leaves on the light outside overnight. I did that a couple nights ago, and you know, all the moths in the entire neighborhood flocked to my house, and I heard them. And so I looked outside, and my yard went biblical. It was enough to cover the underside of the porch, like to the point where you can't really see the stucco. My porch is maybe 15 feet by 15 feet.
They covered a 15 by 15 porch?
Yeah.
So do you just shoo them, trap them, kill them? Maybe the moths are just helping enforce the stay-at-home order.
Now I don't go out at night, and in the morning I shake the door and they fly away. And I don't open the door unless all the lights are off inside.
I try to get them out of here. Could be with a cup if I can. A couple times I've tried to very gently hold them by the wings. Just because something found itself in the wrong place in the wrong time doesn't mean it deserves to die.
Whether they're read as a simple natural nuisance or manifestation of our collective anxiety, the timing of this influx escalates its emotional impact for some.
That's not a good thing to see, you know, when you're in the middle of a pandemic, because you're kind of already on your toes about looking at the situation as the end of the world. Certainly not great timing for one's mental health.
If the moths are the worst thing I have to deal with during COVID, then I'm fine, right? Because I have a job and I have my health. I mean, if you've had a rough day, the last thing you need is a moth flying in your face when you open the door, but I've got a pretty long rope.
So why is this happening now of all times? I spoke with two local entomologists.
My name is Jason Schaller. My title is Curator of Entomology.
And you're with the Albuquerque Biopark.
Yep.
Well, I'm Richard Pagelin. They call me the Bugman. I've been called that for many, many years.
The word infestation has fluttered down to posts online and even Associated Press news stories. During a global pandemic, the term brings up connotations of these bugs being their own kind of outbreak. So is that what this is?
I would call this a normal cyclical population explosion.
Normal is not a word that gets thrown around much these days, but Jason Schaller and Richard the Bugman Fagerland agree. This amount of moths is not out of the ordinary, though it is more than we've seen in the area for several years. So why are they here, and what do they want? Richard the Bugman says it's about drought.
I mean, we haven't had any rain in the mountains or in the desert for a long time. The moths and other animals need some moisture, and they can sense some moisture in cities and towns. You know, people turn the lights on, and they like to come by and say hello in large numbers.
Jason Schaller with the Albuquerque Biopark says that reasoning is sound, but thought it may be more complicated.
It's not as black and white as, oh, it was this, oh, it was this. It's always some weird combination of factors such as weather, predator populations, parasite populations, and diseases, just to name the big ones.
So when can we expect this to end?
Just pray for rain. That's what I tell everybody. Just wait it out.
Another thing is turn off your porch lights at night, because they are attracted to light. And, you know, they'll gather around the lights at night. And then, you know, when the sun comes up, they're right there next to your door. And they're like, all right, we need better shelter. Let's squeeze into these cracks and get in an area that's protected so we don't dry out and overheat.
While we're waiting it out, know that both Schaller and Fagerlund say these are not the types of moths who eat wool sweaters, and they might in fact be saving us from mosquito bites down the line. The moths are satiating the bats, and if the rains pick up, the bugman says the moths will head out and the bats will still be here to eat up the new mosquitoes. Also, when the moths aren't hovering on your doorstep at night, they may be pollinating your garden. Moths can get a bad rap, rooted in the stories that we tell about them. I spoke with Icy Sedgwick, the creator and host of the Fabulous Folklore podcast, about the meanings we ascribe to moths and their presence feeling a little bit apocalyptic.
The one everybody's going to think of is the Death's Head Hulk moth from Silence of the Lambs, because that's kind of become almost the poster child of all things dark and weird. They're the moths that I think Dracula sends to Renfield, you know, so they're linked with sort of the monstrous and so on. Really, though, they're just the same as any other moth. They just really like eating nectar. So they're just kind of like getting high on sugar.
Everything is already feeling kind of so abnormal, but also potentially like an opportunity for transformation. How have moths been represented, if at all, in folklore in a way that might speak to that?
The main thing that you often get is there's a difference between moths and butterflies. So if people had like a sudden, you know, being inundated with butterflies, I don't think people would be as upset, which is a shame because, you know, they both essentially do the same thing. You know, the idea of weaving a cocoon and then emerging as something else. But I think there's been this weird kind of historic divide between butterflies kind of representing the soul, the Greek goddess Psyche, who is the goddess of the soul. She's often represented with butterfly wings, but moths are then kind of seen as almost like the dark side of that. The other thing that I think is really different with moths is this insistence that they've got of flying towards a light. And no one knows why they do that. And I think there's a desire for enlightenment and wanting to know the truth in that way that I think is quite relevant for what's going on at the moment.
Any other aspects of moth folklore that you think our listeners will be interested in hearing about?
One of the weirdest superstitions is if they fly around you at night, which they're apt to do, it means that a letter is on the way. So perhaps you're going to get some kind of hopefully good news on the way. And also there is actually, in some places, there is a belief that moths actually represent messages from angels. And that if they flutter around lights near you, it means that you're having a message of well-wishing, which is quite a nice one, I think. And it makes a bit of a change from all the doom and gloom.
It's always important to go right to the source for comment, and while we can't talk to moths directly about why they chase the light, we can do the next best thing. Speak with the administrators of the Facebook group, a group where we all pretend to be moths in an eclipse of moths, Gabby Gross and Dervin Ramirez. So there's a moth culture that helps to structure the interactions in your group. Can you tell me what that involves?
Well, our culture is real simple. It's to follow our glorious queen lamp and her warmth.
So this show is called Your NM Government, which for our purposes might as well be Your New Moth Government. What does moth government look like exactly?
Well, I mean, our government is more like a cycle. We must worship lamp. We must find a mate that also worships lamp. Have as many hatchlings that worship lamp as well. And when our time comes, we go into the light.
There have been a lot of your friends in New Mexico the last couple weeks. Having our homes crawl with moths during the pandemic is kind of interesting timing. Some have even been reading your presence as almost a bit apocalyptic. How do you feel about that and people's fears of you and your friends in large groups?
I mean, do they think of us as an invasion?
People have used that term.
Well, I mean, of course it's not an invasion. Only the ants take that role. They're the only ones that invade. But we moths simply seek shelter. When we ran into you guys' city, it looked like you guys were having a party of lights. And we're like, why not join them? We figured, you know, we wouldn't be a nuisance.
Some New Mexicans have been trying to get you out of their homes. What are your thoughts on these tactics?
We're trying to seek shelter like everybody else is during this time. If humans don't want us around, the best way, maybe leave some water, you know, beneath like a light or whatever, and it'll keep us away from the areas they don't want us at.
Okay, that's a good tip. I spoke to a folklorist who told us that moths kind of get a bad rap compared to butterflies. How do you feel about the butterfly comparisons?
Honestly, I think we're just the cooler versions of the species.
Because some people think of butterflies as like prettier or nicer. Thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, they don't know how to party like we do around lamp.
This cycle of moths is expected to be over in the coming weeks, though there may be a few smaller resurgences over the summer. Until then, I guess enjoy the party. Thank you to Gregory Gold, Ann McCollum, Elena Maieta, Justin Muehlmeyer, and Michelle Island for sharing their mothly experiences with us. For your new moth government, I'm Nash Jones.
Tune in tomorrow to KUNM's show, Let's Talk New Mexico, where executive producer Marisa DeMarco and reporter Yasmin Khan pick up the conversation we started here Friday about treatment of the cleaning crew at UNM Hospital and celebrate people all over the state doing the life-saving work of sanitizing our spaces. That's tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. on KUNM. It's about that time, it's about that time, it's about that time for resources. You can get a full list of the resources we talk about on each episode and opportunities to donate or help online at bit.ly/YNMGHub. You can get more information on Real Big Flicks by heading to the website realbigflicks.com. That's REELBIGFLIX.com. You can see how you can become a part of the One Albuquerque Project by going to cabq.gov/one-Albuquerque. To find out more about the Drifters Car Club, just head to their Facebook page, Drifters Car Club Albuquerque. Check out the Tanix Radio on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/thetanix. They're also on Facebook and Instagram. And if you've suddenly fallen in love with moths, or you're just a bit more curious, you can check out the Albuquerque Biopark. Head to cabq.gov/cultural-services/biopark. You can check out the work of Icy Sedgwick by heading to icysedgwick.com. And if you'd like, there's a Facebook group titled, and I'm not kidding about this, a group where we pretend to be moths in an eclipse of moths. That's what it's called. I may fly my way over to that page to see what that lamp is all about. Here is Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays on KUNM's airwaves at 7:30 p.m. online. Find the show on KUNM.org or subscribe anywhere, anywhere, anywhere you get your podcasts. Your New Mexico Government is a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and the Santa Fe Reporter. Funding for our coverage is provided in part by the Thornburg Foundation, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the New Mexico Local News Fund, and KUNM listeners like you. Your New Mexico Government is executive produced by Marisa DeMarco, theme music by Pope, Yes, Yes, Y'all. It's produced by yours truly, news update by Marisa DeMarco. Thanks to Nash Jones and Ty Bannerman for their contributions. Super thanks to newsroom director Hannah Colton for helping with the editing. I'm Khalil A. Colonna. For everyone here at Your New Mexico Government, thanks for listening.